Thank you for coming to session five in the Align class. As you will see from the title, we're talking about retirement planning, being financially wise in that. In previous times, as just a quick review, we've talked about in lesson one, God owns it all and we're the managers. One day we're going to stand before God and he's going to ask us the question, not only what did you do with my son, Jesus Christ, but will also ask us, what did you do with the stuff that I gave to you? Then we talked about some of the pushback in our society, about why do we have to work, how do we get money to spend, God's order for using that money, giving, saving, and then we talked about debt and debt resolution, and we're up to lesson five today on retirement planning. Now, as I have mentioned before, every spending decision is a financial one if, in fact, God is the owner of all, and this is spiritual material that we are sharing, and we will only hear as the Spirit becomes our teacher. I would like to take a moment and pray and ask God to bring that to us, which we can use in our own lives in being a better manager or steward for him. Join me in a word of prayer. Father in heaven, you are so gracious in giving us a handbook for living as a follower of yourself and the Lord Jesus Christ. And God, you've been very specific in this area of material possessions, management of what you own as you own it all, and what you expect from us. I thank you for the time we have in this session to take a look at how we think about what we call in our country retirement, and how we can plan for that and be faithful stewards so that in fact we can bless others even as we come to that point in our life. So let the Spirit be your teacher and go chair to chair here in this room. And as this is listed in future days, and may we hear what you want to tell us about this course, I pray in Christ's name, amen. So today, pursuing financial freedom, retirement planning, I'm going to start out with a little bit of shock therapy with some statistics of the condition, the deplorable condition of retirement planning in our country today. It is incredible, as you see some statistics in just a moment, of where we are as a country, one of the richest countries in the world, with a lot of wealth passing through our hands, knowing that one day we're going to have to take care of ourselves and maybe end working in where we are today. Let's look at some of those pieces along the way. There are fill-outs in either your sheet or your book, and usually they are underlined, hopefully all the time, on the screen so you can follow along. First one, 97% of retirees could not write a check for $600. Think of what that means. If you made even $40,000 or maybe $50,000 on average for 40 years of work, and there's a couple million dollars that went through your checking account or however you handled your money, and coming to the end of the end of life, where you only have, you cannot write a check for $600, speaks of a huge problem of mismanagement of God's blessing to us as a whole country. 54% are still working after 65. I'm going to give you the results of a Forbes study from 2013 that unpacks this a little bit more. But more than half of people work after 65. Now, some are doing that voluntarily. If there's opportunity, if there's health, then that can be a good thing. I had a man in class on Sunday. When we hit this point, he raised his hand and he said, "I worked till I was 80 years old and I loved every day of it." I said, "You're an unusual man. If we get to work in a job where we are so fulfilled, we want to work up until we're 80. That is an exception. We talked to her in an earlier class. 92% of people don't like where they're working or what they're asked to do. Huge level of dissatisfaction. 54% have to work. Need to work because they have to just to support themselves in retirement. The 97%, here's the other side. Only 3% of people in our country upon retirement, as I said in my prayer, retirement is it's a cultural thing here. 1935, Franklin Delano Roosevelt started Social Security and the concept of retirement, not working until you could not work anymore. It's a rather recent development of thinking about retirement, and where we set up our culture, we need to plan so that we don't have full-time income. Only 3% have understood that formula and are prepared by setting away during their working years and are what is called financially secure, or another term that's used, able to retire with dignity. In other words, I don't have to push pallets at night in some warehouse or a store in order to pay my rent or pay the heat bill. Tragic. Bankruptcies increased 244% for seniors in the last decade. We'll see that when we unpack the Forbes study and the next data point here. But can you imagine that, coming to the end of life, the later years, and saying, I just give up? Now, there may be some health reasons or long-term illness that bring a person to that point, but 244% increase because seniors didn't manage along the way. Now, the average boomer, you know what boomer is? The boomer generation, born between 1946 and 1964, 10,000 boomers are retiring every day. This has been going on for a few years now. And jumping into the Social Security system, by the way, we'll talk about in a minute. But the average boomer has $30,000 in savings. That's all they've saved up for retirement. When we were talking about the debt lessons, we talked about the inability to contain one's spending to what you earn. We talk further of that with a verse out of Ephesians 4 I'll mention in a way. But can you imagine going your whole lifetime and only having $30,000 spent, able to be in savings in case you needed that money? $30,000. We'll see when we look at the three-legged stool here in a few minutes how that figures out. And if you want to do the math on it, multiply times 4%, that's what their savings will provide for them in retirement. That's why there's a crisis out there. Now, here's kind of a summary to some of those statistics. The lack of planning puts many seniors into the crisis mode leading up to and facing retirement. Here's the breakout on it done by in the Forbes article, and he says there are waves that are happening in our society right now. Wave one, retirees are coming back to work. The man who wrote this article apparently was a consultant. He said, One of my clients is a sheriff's office where I live. And he said, we've seen a number of sheriffs after their retirement party, they get out, they find what it really costs to live, and they say, can we come back to work part-time? He said, here's the main reason it's happening. Now, this is 2013, before Obamacare. The main reason was the cost of insurance. You know, that it is going up. For years, it's been much higher than the inflation rate. And that was not figured into their retirement planning. So retirees want to come back to work. It's not always available. Certainly not usually full-time or at the salary scale where they were working, and often minimum wage, and it is not a solution to it. Number two, workers delay full retirement. That can be a good thing. Let me just throw in this in retirement planning, and it's happened since I retired. I don't find that word in the Bible, which I stopped working for compensation. That's a little harder to say, but more descriptive. Since my wife and I got into that situation, there's been a great gift handed out by Social Security. For every year that you work after the full retirement age, which is 66 and a half or 7 right now, if you work another year and make a Social Security deposit, then you will be given 4% more on an annual basis in your retirement check. So I have friends, and it's what we did. We worked till 70. I didn't get the whole benefit on that. But there's a great gift in Social Security. So in retirement planning, especially if you're up into the years and you're facing, should I retire or not, just keep working a year or two. 4, 8, 12, 16% if you work till age 70, more in your retirement check every year for trying to entice people to keep contributing to Social Security. Number three, full retirement is unachievable. A majority of people in our country right now are saying, I will never be able to stop working. That is not a choice. That's why the phrase is used, retire with dignity, so that you can come to the place where you have a choice not to work. And it's all rooted way back into the ages that are represented here, down into the 20s, when decisions are made along the way. In wave four, according to this author, is drowning, full crisis. That's when you go into bankruptcy. That's when you move in with the kids. That's when you go on public assistance of some sort, because you've just run out. You've gone through your resources, and there's no longer possibility, maybe because of health or opportunity, to increase your income. Now, the classic model of talking about retirement planning is often built on this idea of a three-legged stool. A one-legged stool is just idiotic, right? If you ever tried to sit on a rock on a stick, which I've done before down in Haiti. But that's not very practical. Two-legged is worse. But the three-legged stool, if you have one of those stools at home or ever milk cows with one, is a very stable kind of fixture. And when we talk about it in retirement planning, it's often called the three-legged stool retirement planning. Number one, Social Security. As I said, 1935, Franklin Delano Roosevelt wanted to say to people, you don't have to work all your life. The government is going to, if you will pay in, the government is going to take care of you, at least in part, when you retire. However, for those of you who are younger here, 30, 35 and younger, the statistic is this. More of you believe in UFOs than you ever think you'll get a dollar out of Social Security. Now, I don't know what God is going to do. But, you know, this is a classic, you know, three-legged stool of retirement that we have the Social Security guaranteed check. Now, guaranteed is an emphasis. I have a friend in California, very successful businessman. Has a national business. He came to the full retirement age and he applied for it and he got a letter in the mail and said, you get zero, buddy. There was one irate businessman. Did you know that if you make too much, you get nothing after contributing all the years? So it's a shaky system. You can read the doomsayers on it or the ones with a more optimistic outlook. But if you are in Social Security, by the way, as a pastor and talking to some pastors, some may have opted out of Social Security and you don't have that leg, then you need to take a look at the stool and what will stabilize that. But most of us in here, if we contribute to Social Security, which we have to by law, unless there's some exemption, then we have that as that one piece. Social Security was never intended to fund our full retirement. You've heard of people living on Social Security, they're just not making it because it was never intended to fund it all. The second one is pension and retirement. And there's going to be opportunity to ask Karen Lamar some questions later regarding this and how you're doing it and how you get into it. But this becomes a huge piece, but there are also just tidal wave changes happening in our society. I put the term up there, pension and retirement, but really pension could almost be X'd out in our culture today. Companies are no longer giving pensions. Now, there's a good reason for that, because pensions made promises that they were not able to keep, are not able to keep as we speak. I have a man in my in the community group over in Gentry, met yesterday morning. Our host, his father, was a fireman in Detroit. He now lives down in North Carolina, but he just got a check or got a letter recently saying your pension benefits, City of Detroit, are being cut down to almost nothing. And according to my friend, his dad sent a letter back and said, just keep that, put me on welfare, I'll make more. Okay, which may be close to true. But pensions have promised huge, maybe over 100% of what you earned during your working years and are now not able to perform it. The county we came from, in Northern California, a major city there, a county seat, Stockton, California, went bankrupt just before we came here. Alameda, California, another Bay Area city. And that's happening because the promise of pensions. So corporate and municipalities are drawing back. I don't know if anybody is offering a pension anymore. A pension is a promise to offer you, as soon as you start drawing on that, a certain amount, probably per month, until you die, normally, or you may spread it out over your spouse. Those guarantees are not out there, and what's available today is either a 401k if you're in secular, or if you're in the church or nonprofit sector, it's the 403b, and that's for churches, schools, hospitals, 501c3s, etc. But it's a savings plan you voluntarily put in some amount. Maybe the employer will match it. But the risk part is this. It rides with whatever the investments are, where a pension would be a guaranteed check. Although I got a letter December 31 from my pension holder saying, we've been doing well, and we think it's going to, you know, be there. But remember, there is no guarantee with any pension fund. Okay? So, again, a shaky leg on the stool. Roth and regular IRAs are another way to voluntarily put aside, apart from the 403B that may be offered here or that you're eligible for, or a 401K. You can do some separate saving, another $5,500 a year. So there's some ways out there to make this leg more stable, even in a day when there are no pensions. And the last one is personal savings. If you read in the financial material, you will see various numbers. Some are like 8 times your working, your annual income when you stopped working. Well, that could be a huge number, especially if you don't start setting it aside until, say, mid-50s, when most people start worrying about their retirement. But there's some multiple out there. You can go on sites like Kiplinger.com and do a retirement calculator. And one of the pieces they will give you, what should you have in savings if you are going to continue your lifestyle at least at 75% of what you're used to living on now? Okay. So savings. Now go back to the boomers. What did I say they had in savings? $30,000. Now there's a 4% annual withdrawal rule. And the 4% is built on the fact that today, with average annual lifespan, that many of us, thinking from 65 or 66 or 67, many of us are going to live 25 to 30 years. So you can't be drawing out 10% of your savings every year if it's going to last for 25 or 30 years. So they talk about the 4% rule, that if you draw out 4%, and that can be indexed up with inflation following that, but 4%, your savings should mostly be there when you come to the end, when God takes us home. I have a friend out on the West Coast by the name of Hendricks. He's a development officer there, and he wrote an article sometime within the last year. He works for Trinity Western College in Vancouver, and he said, what we don't anticipate is if we keep to the 4% rule, and it could be in IRAs and in other sources, and we do that faithfully, we could come to the end of our lifetime and have most of that left to distribute out to bless our family and bless kingdom, et cetera, et cetera. But it's the discipline of not spending all that $30,000 if you have a number up high enough, therefore you can draw 4% out, supplement the other two legs of the stool, and have retirement with dignity, or as we'll see, financial freedom here in a little while. So the three-legged stool financial planning, for those of you who are thinking retirement or already into it, review it, look at it, make contributions to it. That's the way that you move to financial freedom. What's the definition of that? When your passive income exceeds your expenses. Okay, let me unpack that a little bit. When your pension, your Social Security if it's there, interest on your savings, investment income exceed your living expenses. Okay, now by God's grace, and not because Ray and I were so smart or even understood this, you know, all during our lifetime, we were faithful in putting into the pension fund to which we contributed. And therefore, we have the luxury at this point in our life to have the joy of volunteering here at Fellowship. Or volunteering. Ray works at a food distribution and clothing distribution, does books over there in Siloam, where we live, in Siloam Springs. Well, that only comes about if you have financial freedom and can come to that point. And Lamar, you and I have talked about the book Halftime, positioning yourself so that when you come to this later years of your life, you're free to do what God has called us to do. You love it, you're fulfilled by it, and you extend the kingdom along the way. This is the goal, the bottom line in retirement planning, financial freedom as you move into that retirement phase of life. However, reality in our culture is that the addiction to materialism, consumption, and greed. Now, what does that mean? Addiction, I can't stop buying. I go to the store and I buy something, I bring it home, I never wear it, or a tool, or, you know, whatever touches you. It's an addiction in our culture to buy. Materialism, consumption, we are a consuming society. We talked about the verse in Ephesians 4:28, back in our giving lesson, session three, how from the very beginning, God never intended all of our paycheck be spent on ourselves. And if you look at the end of Ephesians 4:28, it says that we should work with our hands. It starts out, do not steal, work with your hands, that you may have something to share with others. God never intended us to spend it all. But the message in our society is not only spend it all, but if you run out of money, guess what? You have that little plastic in your pocket. And you can go up to 103 and 110% of spending in our society, be very respectable, but it will take away from being faithful toward your retirement. Materialism, consumption, greed, accumulation in our culture, worrying about our security, though we profess theologically, biblically, that our security is in God, being greedy and accumulating when our God is a God of circulation and distribution, not a God of accumulation. God said some things about saving up for retirement, and one would be Proverbs 21:20. The wise store up choice food and oil, but fools gulp theirs down. Those are not my words. Those are God's word. Don't kill the messenger. But God is pretty straightforward. If we have income during life and we have health and energy and opportunity to make a living and have some in excess, which certainly we do in our country and particularly in Northwest Arkansas, and if we just gulp it all down and spend it and end up with nothing at the end of the life, God just uses the four-letter word there, which you can see. Another verse, Proverbs 30, 24, and 25. Four things on earth are small, yet they're extremely wise. Ants are creatures of little strength, yet they store up their food in the summer. We do not have to be smarter than a fifth grader. Okay? We just have to be smarter than an ant. Okay, God says, that should be so natural that you know there's going to be a day coming when you can't harvest and you can't work. Wouldn't it make some sense to put it away? That's the discipline of retirement planning. Starts with the youngest of you right in here. Now, the wise person, little summary, who develops self-control and planning will be, in those next two words I did not have in when I first started doing this class. And then I thought about our culture internationally. I put in most likely be prepared, because there is no guarantee. I didn't read the news in the last couple days, but a few days ago, before going into Sunday class on this, Greece was just saying, help, help, we don't have any money, going to upset the EU, the euro, etc. And if you're reading, whether it's the conspiracy theorists or the doomsdayers, that there's a whole new money system coming into our country now, and 20 government agencies are accepting that money, and so I don't know what's going to happen with the dollar. You know, my savings is in dollars. Well, I don't know. Most likely, if we are disciplined, then we will be prepared for the retirement phase of life. But I can't guarantee it, but I can guarantee that there's a God that I think we all believe in who says, I will take care of my people one way or the other, and I know that's where our real security is. So how do we then get prepared for retirement? We've talked about the downside, the tragic status in our culture. What do we need to do? Here are some basic rules and principle. First of all, we look at God's counsel, where he says, steady plotting brings prosperity. Steady plotting brings prosperity. And the verse for this is, one verse is Proverbs 21 and verse 5. Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity, but hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. I read another translation of this where it says, saving little by little. And the author was quick to point out that in the Hebrew, those words, whether it's good planning and hard work or little by little or faithfully, whatever translation, that Hebrew word says there is something about accumulating with the work of our hands, that it puts more value in what we do versus the last part of the verse, hasty shortcuts. He said, talks not only, if you go back to the original language, talks not only about the speed of it, but the ease of it. We didn't have to work for it. We got it real easily. And he said, the way God has made us, if we have to work for something, we put greater value in it, especially the work of our hands. Rather than being handed something for free, it doesn't make any difference. And we could discuss, what are the hasty shortcuts in our society? If you think of the lotto ticket, Dave Ramsey calls that stupid tax. With all due apology to that dollar you left at wherever last night when you got gas, all right? He said, it's just stupid tax. Why would you do that to yourself? And if we read what happens to people that win the lottery, who, by and large, are not good money managers, within 18 months, many of them have declared bankruptcy, though they got $22 million, because they helped all their friends and bought the Lamborghini or whatever they did. Good planning and hard work lead to prosperity. Hasty shortcuts lead to poverty. It's a biblical principle. I didn't write it. God did. Now, here's a chart coming up. It's a little small, but let me just brief you on this. It's a 30-year span of investing $20 a month. It's 6% interest, a little high to get right now, but the numbers will be coming back, I'm sure, as we move into inflation and so forth. But it shows putting in $20 a month in the dark blue columns along the bottom are the $20, and then you'll see the light blue is what's earned in interest, and it illustrates the power of compounding. If you did that just for 30 years, and if you got 6% on average, which would likely be possible over a span of 30 years, then you would have just under $90,000 to use for your retirement or whatever your needs were at that time. The power of compounding. However, there's somebody that made a comment on it, and it's the hairy guy in the upper right. Albert Einstein said, compounding is the greatest mathematical discovery of all time, not E equals MC squared. Thank you, Albert. Okay? There is power in compounding. Faithfully putting it away, steady plotting, just doing it with discipline, your retirement plan, your saving, your IRA, and it's amazing what that will be over time if we grow it. Now, how to prepare for retirement? In a way, very simple, but maybe not always easy. Simply said, spend less than you earn, save and invest the difference. That's not new news. One of the shocking things happening in our society today, and Greg Gaynor and I had a conversation on this the last couple of weeks, is that millennials are pulling out of their retirement funds to buy trinkets, okay? A new something that they have to have. And there's a fallacy being sold out there right now that, oh, don't worry about it. You're just borrowing from yourself, from your 401k. But Greg said that he went into a computer or went into a calculator. Somebody had come to him, and he's a teacher in FPU, Financial Peace, here at Fellowship, and he said, somebody came to him and said, should I take $10,000 out of my 401k to put down on a house? We really want a house, but we don't have anything saved up for it. Should I take that $10,000 out? Greg counseled no on it, but he said, I went to the calculator, and I figured out over the span of life, say 30 years forward, 35 years, what would that $10,000 cost that person in retirement funds? Guess what it was? $250,000 with loss of earnings and loss of that there earning at the rate in the 401k. So, short-term decisions lead to long-term disaster. And if we could say anything about retirement planning, it's the discipline of spending less than you earn, Ephesians 4:28, invest the difference, and we're going to talk about being wise in the investment. Earlier in one of our classes, we looked at this chart, and again, it's so small, but I can interpret it for you pretty easily. It's the savings rate from 1950 up until actually 2020. The vertical gray bars are recessions. The blue line is not the heartbeat. Well, maybe it is the heartbeat of our country because it's a savings rate. Right? And you can see that whenever there's a recession, then people get scared and the savings rate goes up. But how long does it last? Boom, just comes right back down. Because we are addicted to materialism, consumption, greed, addiction to having our things. Now, the last vertical gray line is 2007, 2008, where again you see for a little while people said, boy, we got to quit spending. Now, before that, I saw some charts that showed a negative savings rate in our country. The bottom here is zero, but I saw some that were down below, that there were so many people overspending, nothing for retirement, that the cumulative savings rate was below zero. Here it doesn't show it quite down there, but as you can see, even the 07, 08 recession has not sobered us. Now savings is going down again as we get out to 11, 12, 13, 14 along the way. So this is indicative of our society. Our key verse, as many of us know for this class, is Romans 12, 2. Do not be conformed to this world, but be transformed by the renewing of our mind in Christ Jesus. Do not do like the world saves. Do not do like the world does for planning for retirement, but instead hear God's truth and save up even as an ant knows how to do it. Now, if I go to a financial planner or a financial counselor, what is the first thing that they say about our investments? Diversify your investment. What's amazing to me is that Solomon wrote that same advice almost 3,000 years ago. How did he know that? But listen to what he says. Diversify, divide your investments among many places. For you do not know what risk might lie ahead. Okay? Here's Solomon. Here's a financial planner in 2015. It's the same message. When you're thinking about investing for retirement, nobody knows what is going to go up or down. Will it be gold? Will it be REITs? Will it be securities? Will it be bonds? Will it be mid-cap, small-cap, large-cap? What is going to go up and down? And diversification certainly would be one of God's wise points in doing retirement planning. Now, in a 401k, you may or may not have some control over that. We can ask questions about that later. But oftentimes, that may be a fund that's pre-selected. But keep watch on that. That's why when I talked about the three-legged stool, not all should be in your 401k or 403b. Your own IRA, your own savings plan, whatever. Diversify your investments. Avoid risky investments. We all know that as a kind of a truism, but I want to just tell you today that not only common folk like us may be gullible at that point. In fact, it's amazing to me that when Solomon wrote a verse here, you'll see in a moment, human nature has not changed from 3,000 years ago to now. When we think there's a good deal and we can take advantage of it, then we're ready to do that. One of the most notable ones, and it had to do with Christian organizations, is why so indelibly impressed in my memory. Some of you may remember New Era Philanthropy. The guy was John Bennett, who was going around to Christian organizations in our country with this deal of just, you can't believe how true it is. And many people, and if you look at the list of people who invested $500 million into the New Era Philanthropy Fund before Security and Exchange Commissions shut it down as a Ponzi scheme, you would be amazed. World Vision, Wheaton College, James Dobson, Moody Bible Institute, I think Biola was in it, and you go down the list. So it's not just folks that are not sophisticated can be smart enough to avoid risky investments. We all have a bit of greed in us, and we say, that's a good deal. I can't let that go. We'll look at the indicators of a risky investment here in a moment. First is unusually high rate of return. And that's what John Bennett said to the boards of those Christian organizations who are overseers of God's money. You just put it in here, and boy, within 12 months' time, it'll double. Or I don't know what the numbers were, but it was so gold, gold-plated, that even people who are very wise could not turn it down. Unusually high rate of return. We all know when a deal looks too good to be true, it is too good to be true. Exactly. But sometimes it's just too tempting, and we may step into it. Decision must be made quickly. This is only going to be open until we see this, at least I do, on my computer all the time. We're going to take this down in 24 hours. You got to do it right now. Click, buy right now. Give me your credit card number, your PayPal. You go back 48 hours, guess what? It's still there. But we're so tempted, it's going to go, and I'm not going to take advantage of that. Decision must be made quickly. Little said about risk or loss. John Bennett never said to those boards of godly men and women who were leading those organizations, you know, this is not guaranteed. There is no guarantee. It may work out. Well, it didn't work out. And $135 million went down the drain of money that God's people had given to those organizations before it was all stopped and John Bennett was arrested. Next strategy, maximize returns on your assets and investments. And one of the things I think about here is fees and charges on your investments. And be wise about that. If you have something invested, and you look in your statement, and you find out there's a 1% charge on it, and you're only making 2 or 3%, that's a third of your earnings. Where there are places to invest out there where it's a portion of that, a portion of 1%. Be wise in looking at fees and charges. Be wise in where your investments are and how many times your stocks or investments are turned over in a period of a year. Because every time there's a turnover, there's a charge for doing that, and you're taking away from your earnings. And as Greg Gaynor said, if you take away today and then you go out 30 years, the loss there is huge. Be wise, maximize returns on the investments. Christ, when he was talking in financial language in Matthew 25, he said, "Well done, good and faithful servant. You've been faithful with a few things. I will put you in charge of many things." Now, that is not health, wealth, prosperity teaching. That is principle where God says, if we are good managers of what he has given to us, he will gladly give us some more to manage so we can bless others and reflect, as we talked in the first class, about the generous God whom we serve. That's not health, wealth, prosperity. It's Jesus' words, first of all. You're faithful in a few things? I'd be glad to trust you with more because you're doing what I ask you to do. Not consumption, not materialism, not greed, but being generous and blessing others. And then he says, come and share in your master's happiness. What might that mean? What's the master's happiness for us if we, in fact, are good managers? Somewhere I read there are three blessings that come when we are generous and we give to somebody else. It's, first of all, a blessing to God because we've been obedient and done what he said. Secondly, it's a blessing to us because obedience does bring blessing. And then third, it's a blessing to the recipient. And whether you take the illustration of Christ coming and giving himself and entering into the master's happiness, or whether it's us as we pass through this journey of life and doing what God has said, we're going to be invited to come in to the master's happiness, some here and some for eternity. Now, the next section I want to talk about preparing your children for wise financial management. And why is this in here? Originally, this was not in the material for Align Lesson 5, but people came to me and asked, how do we prepare our children to live with wisdom financially and particularly God's wisdom? And here are a couple reasons for it. We're going to talk about legacy a little bit later, but part of what we need to pass on to our children is how to do what God asks us to do with our material resources, our finances, and the material possessions that we have. None of us are born into this world with financial wisdom. Part of every mom and dad is to pass along to their kids what is wise in handling money. But more important than that, as we talk about it in the retirement realm, if in fact we are leaving some to our children, then they need to be wise in handling the assets that were given to us if in fact we trust them with that after we are gone through our financial plans. So let's look at this. How do we carry this out, preparing your children? One, accept your responsibility to train your children. Accept your responsibility to train your children. Proverbs 22:6, very familiar passage. Train up a child in the way he should go, or direct your children onto the right path in this translation. When they're older, they will not leave it. There is something about planting seeds of good financial wisdom in your children's life that will pay off during their lifetime and probably pay off after your lifetime, especially if they become managers of some of your assets. Secondly, model good financial management practices of sharing with others and generosity. A week ago Sunday, our two children, spouses, and six grandchildren finally got all of our act together, and we pooled our money with every grandchild and every adult, putting in what God wanted them to, and went into the World Vision catalog, and we bought three goats, some chickens, some mosquito nets, some clean water for somewhere, and something else along the way. And we're trying to deposit into our family good financial management practices in modeling generosity and helping others. What I was amazed at, and our youngest grandchild, I think is 10 years old, and 10 up to 20, 21, 22, six of them. But a number of the grandchildren said, when their mom or dad went to them and said, how do you want to participate in this project? A number of them said, I want to give my whole month's allowance to that. Wow. I mean, the dollars were not big, but think of that, you know, if we came to you and said, will you give a whole month's salary to buy a goat or a chicken for somebody somewhere in the world? I mean, they're catching this generosity thing, and we are thrilled about that. Discuss your financial responsibilities and decisions with them. Ray and I grew up in an age where it's not near as open as some of the generations after us, and we didn't do a very good job at this, frankly. And you know, if I were to go back, wish I'd have known this, 40, 50 years ago when we were raising kids. But this is where we have an opportunity to talk with our kids and how we're doing that. If you know Greg Gaynor, I had him give an illustration last week in class about how he started dealing with his 9-year-old girl, and her mom would talk with her when they were shopping. And he said, now at 11, she'll go in a store with her mom and say, Mom, that's not a good deal there. Let's wait until we find it on sale. You know, there's a better price than that. I know that. And just talking with your kids and teaching them a responsibility along the way. Deuteronomy 6, familiar. You know, do it when you're going in, coming out, lying down, getting up, eating, and so forth. Talking to our kids so it becomes a part of our conversation. Introduce financial responsibility into your children's thinking processes. We've talked previously about how do we do that. Some people do allowances, but there's some risk in that of creating an entitlement mentality. Dave Ramsey says, use commissions. That's the real world. You work, you get something. This handout, just because you happen to breathe or get up out of bed, that's not the real world. So be careful. But somehow we need to teach that along the way. Introducing financial principles that are age appropriate. Handling money. If I put a nickel and a dime in my hand and offer it to a 2-year-old, what are they going to take? The big one. They're not born with financial sense. Okay, and that just spreads out and spending and buying and saving and so forth. So somewhere we have to teach our kids along the way, earning money and work, difficult in our society that's moved to a paycheck versus when people were more connected to some space and had responsibilities. Giving, saving, spending, teaching your children that, whether it's with the first dollar they get, you have a little box or jars or something and say, okay, this 10 cents goes in this jar because that's God's, and this 10 cent we're going to save, and then this 70 cents, you can save these up until you have enough to buy that necklace or buy that little whatever they want to do. Teaching them from the earliest age possible about money. And then delayed gratification, the curse of our society. I want it, and I want it now. And that's why we end up with no money for retirement, and that's why we take out of our 401k and say it won't make any difference. It will make a difference. Expect and allow mistakes because kids are growing. Okay, and then talk about the mistakes of buying it for full price. Or I remember one of my Protestant seminary, Howard Hendricks, talked about his girl. Just couldn't talk her out of buying a necklace. She knew it was so cheap that it wouldn't last. Well, she bought it willfully, and then on the way home, it broke and cried all the way home. Well, that's how you learn. you tears and mistakes. Pray for each one's growth and financial responsibility, watching them grow, learn more and more about money. Greg Gaynor just smiles when he talks about little Colby and how wise she is. Has her own investment account already at 11, walks into the broker and says, here's what I want to do today with my investments. Wow. Allow for personality differences. when our daughter was buying a house over in Siloam. She talked to a realtor, happened to be a mother, son, and the realtor just volunteered. This son here, he really knows how to take care of money. My other son grew up in the same home. He doesn't have a dime to his name. Personality differences. Some are savers, some are spenders, and we need to work with them. Now, we're going to move to a video now to close out our time. It's Mr. and Mrs. Chet Stewart, Chet and Diana Stewart, Albuquerque, New Mexico, just to set the stage. Funeral home directors, but an interesting story of where they are today, how they learned about putting some of the principles we're talking about here. You will see illustrated what we talked about, particularly with trusting your children for taking care of some of your things when you're gone. And listen for what the wife says about trusting their kids as good financial managers, okay?
You know, facing the reality of the life to come is really something that you think about when you see death all the time. Well, I'm Chet Stewart.
And I'm Diana.
And we're from Albuquerque, New Mexico.
And we've been married 46 years.
I have to tell you, our work, what we do, has affected how we view what God has given us. In 1904, my grandfather, Chester T. French, came to Albuquerque with his younger brother who had tuberculosis. And back in those days, they didn't know how to treat it except to take the person to a dry climate. And so that's what led him to come to Albuquerque. And his brother died shortly after that. And he took him back to East Tennessee to where the family was from, and he was buried there. But in the process, he began to sense a calling to go into funeral service because he had been through this death experience with his brother. And he came back to Albuquerque, and he started the business in 1907. In 1964, when I was stationed in San Antonio at Fort Sam Houston, and I was about to get out of the military, he called me and he said, "I want you to come to Albuquerque and be my partner in the business." And he was 82 at the time, I was 24. And I came, and in my mind, I was coming for a year really out of respect for my grandfather. And he died 3 weeks after I got back. And so very quickly, I had the responsibility for running the business at a very young age. Well, the first year that I was here, I began to see that funeral service was a ministry to people, or it could be a ministry to people. And I began to see that my gifts and talents really kind of fit that ministry. And I really began to sense that God was calling me to do it, and that we could really make a difference in the lives of people by serving them genuinely with high integrity and with great compassion. And I realized early on that you really weren't ready to live until you were ready to die. And if you're ready to die, then your living is going to be much more meaningful, and what you do is going to be much more meaningful.
I think it has shaped me in the way that when I've gone to funerals and helped with funerals, how you can tell the kind of a life a person's lived by the way the funeral is. You can always tell the givers from the takers.
When you can really begin to understand what the Bible says about giving, it's just so life-changing. And you realize that the stuff that you have is just stuff, and it's so temporary. And you're not taking it with you. You know, being in the funeral business, we realize that we don't have any trailers behind our hearses. Thank you. You know, we were brought, both of us were brought up to give. We believed in tithing. We always tithe. And a few years ago, when we went to the first Generous Giving Conference, I think it just kind of opened up the lenses of what biblical generosity really was.
When we began to learn that, to really experience the freedom that if it's all His, then it's all right. It's all His.
Because we always believed that God was the owner, but we were controlling it. And the control issue was really the big thing for us. And so we began to give, I hate to talk about what we're giving, but we started giving substantially more. And of course, a lot of that came out of our assets. Because we decided we don't need to grow our assets anymore. We have far more than we need. And God has used that to help us get rid of the fear that we had, you know, the fear of being secure. You know, the only place that we need to be secure is in His hands. You know, we want to be in His hands.
I think we get locked in that tithe box, and it's not a bad box. It's just not the only box. It's not a big enough box.
And our prayer has been in the last part of our lives that we would still be able to make a difference in the lives of people we come in contact with, because, you know, ultimately we're not going to be here, and the lives of our kids, how they're bringing up their kids, is really important to us, and how our sons value their wives and love their wives, very important to us. We're leaving our kids some money because we trust them.
Now
they prove that they're accountable. And they love God, and they're serving Him. So we are leaving our kids some of our resources, and then we're also the rest will be in a trust that they will control
how it's distributed,
how it's given. When you realize that the greatest gift that was ever given was what God gave us in the gift of His Son, it's a life-changing thing. And when you can really begin to understand what the Bible says about giving, it's just so life-changing. You know, you just realize as you get older, if people could just really understand, there's so little understanding of biblical generosity, the difference it makes in your lives, how much richer you can be.
Sharing what we have is a way to do that. Even if I can't go, I'm not called to go to Africa or wherever, I can help somebody do that. And that's eternal.
The reason I like that video, it picks up what we've talked about all the way up to lesson five of the phrases that maybe you heard in there. God is the owner of all generosity. His statement, we're not ready to die until we're ready to live. And then the little word by Diana, his wife, we trust him now. It takes raising up our children if they're going to be managing some of our money.